Time had no meaning. She slept, she supposed, and woke again. It seemed like a moment of inattention rather than normal sleep. Sometimes she heard voices around her, and sometimes they talked about her. More often they talked of other things. She came to know one woman's voice, and built from her gossipy chatter a picture of someone with bright, avid eyes and a pursed mouth. Then another, who never added to the gossip, but had a satisfied chuckle, as if she were glad to hear bad things about others. The doctor, who had talked to the lawyer, came in frequently, but she always knew him. Scents merged with sounds, with pressures. She knew the smell of her own body and its output. She hated the wet warmth that turned cold too often before someone came to change her. She hated the hands that turned and moved her as if she were a slab of meat. She came to hate with special fervor a flowery perfume one pair of hands wore, hands colder and less deft than the others, belonging to a sharp, whining voice that complained of her incontinence. Hate blurred thought. She fought it back. She could not afford that, any more than she could afford to go insane from the darkness and immobility. Instead, she scrabbled at her memories, struggling to rip another minute detail from the black fog. Gradually, she assembled them in order, like torn scraps of a picture laid out on black velvet. That first awakening, with the terrifying talk about drugs to inhibit, to decouple. It had come after whatever happened, but before, and in another place. Then only the odd glimmer, not even clear memories, until the doctor-lawyer conference. A string of clearer memories, then another lapse, after which she no longer felt the wetness of incontinence. From what she overheard, she had had surgery to implant controllable sphincters, however that worked. Since then, more and clearer memories, but still no return of function. She could not move. She could not see. She could not talk. Her mind slid inexorably sideways to the memory of riders she'd known with broken necks or head injuries. But those were injuries, trauma. This was something else. She was still thinking, and if she'd had her head crushed against a tree, she wouldn't be.
30 days plus. How many plus? Or is it how much plus?
For a moment, her mind chased that grammatical hair into a thicket of forgotten rules. She yanked it back out and slapped its nose. Only one thing mattered, and it certainly wasn't a point of grammar. She had to find a way out, a way to make some connection to the world. And yet she had to be sure it was the right connection. Whoever had done this would be watching, she was sure, for any untoward behaviors, any return of speech or movement. And how could she tell who was safe when she couldn't communicate? Someone had to know. Unless doctors had never known what they were doing, someone had to know she was still alive inside, still capable of thinking. Still thinking, in fact. Either someone wanted to torment her, and she couldn't think of a good reason, since apparently she didn't even twitch in ways that would amuse a sadist, or someone was concealing her remaining capacity. She liked that idea better. She had an ally somewhere, faking brain scans and whatever other tests the medical system used to determine that her brain wasn't working. It would have been easy to kill her, easy to do the damage that was supposed to have been done, easy to do that still, but they hadn't. She had an ally. If she could stay sane, maybe, just maybe, that someone would figure out a way to rescue her and undo the damage.
You're sure she's aware?
Lorenza had to ask again. She could not hear the answer too often.
Yes, ma'am. And as I said, the way it's set up, there's blind feed on her cables. It'll never show up on her scans now that she's got the implants.
Perfect. A delicious shiver fluttered inside her. Cecilia, helpless, motionless, blind, and knowing it. The only thing that would be better would be a very personal and private way to communicate, to let her know who was responsible. Unfortunately, that wasn't possible, and the original drug would have wiped out her memory of the reception.
You'll find your investment in Sultan Realty has paid unexpected dividends. It will be very profitable, I think you'll agree.
Yes, ma'am. But I just want to be sure you really understand the maintenance requirements. Because you wanted her aware, she's going to need regular maintenance doses.
Are you saying it's reversible? I told you it must not be.
It's not reversible, no. Not the main brain damage. But the dose wasn't as massive. It takes tinkering to keep her neuromuscular status where we want it, with normal maintenance at the nursing home feeding her other drugs. That's all.
Very well.
She didn't understand the medical details and didn't intend to learn. The important thing, all that mattered, was the thought of Cecilia. Arrogant, athletic, triumphant Cecilia, reduced to a flaccid, blind body that anyone could manipulate. She didn't even have to visit the place herself. It was enough to know that Cecilia inhabited a dark, friendless place where she was utterly helpless and from which there was no escape.
Your payments will arrive quarterly. That's the normal schedule for dividend payout from Sultan Realty. When it's time for you to invest in another company, your broker will inform you.
She cut off the call and sat poised in her tapestry chair, looking around her exquisite sitting room. All the lovely colors Cecilia would never see again, all the sensual pleasures of silken clothing, savory food and drink, fresh flower-scented air, favorite music, sex. Her brother, the Crown Minister, found her pensive in the firelight, hand pressed to her cheek, and tea cold in the cup beside her on the table.
What's the matter? Are you ill?
It's that poor woman. That poor, poor woman. Stricken like that. I just can't stop thinking about poor dear Cecilia.
Harris faced Brunn over the dining table in her suite at the fanciest hotel the station offered. One waiter hovered, serving expensive food Harris didn't want, but had to pretend to eat. Brunn, still playing the spoiled rich girl, gobbled eagerly. Finally, she chose the most elaborate of the dessert pastries offered and waved the cart and waiter away.
Oh, we'll ring when we're through, thanks.
As they left, she picked up the pastry and bit into it, showering flakes in all directions. When the door closed, she took a small gray wand out of her pocket and handed it to Harris with a grin. Harris picked it up and scanned the room. Apparently clean of recorders, spy eyes, and such, and this wand, activated, made as good a privacy shield as civilian life afforded. She turned it on its side and placed it between them.
So, you've taken my advice in that direction?
Of course. I told you I was serious. Ronnie said you wanted to see me about his Aunt Cecilia. I thought I should make it easy to explain.
Good for you.
You know what they're saying about you.
Ronnie told me some of it.
Ronnie only knows what his parents tell him. His mother's telling all her friends that you're the most dangerous woman since that charlatan built the Cousin sisters out of their fortune by pretending to contact their dead lovers, and then killed them to cover up when their nephew found out about it. She nearly killed him, too.
I never heard of that.
No, you wouldn't have. But the thing is, Berenice is telling everyone that you must have had that kind of influence on Lady Cecilia. She even thinks that stuff on the island didn't really happen, and that you hypnotized Aunt Cecilia into thinking it did. Dad's not here, or he'd set her straight about that. She's hinting that you even did something. No one will say what, to cause the stroke. Ronnie thinks his mother's upset about the redecorating, but I know it's more than that. I'm just not sure what.
I had thought of going down to see her, of course.
Oh, no, better not. I don't think Berenice would let you see her. You're not family, and she's got a right to decide who else can visit.
What about you?
Me? Oh, I'm not family or one of Cecilia's friends, but I suppose I could be Dad's representative, sort of.
Exactly what I thought. Did Ronnie tell you about the will?
Will?
I presume he didn't, then. It will come out later if there's a competency hearing or if Lady Cecilia dies. Apparently, she changed her will almost as soon as she arrived, and she left me, a substantial legacy. The yacht.
So that's what...
That may be part of it. She didn't tell me she was doing this, or I'd have talked her out of it, of course. But the point is that if there's a chance the stroke was caused by a drug or something, then I'm the obvious suspect. It's understandable that her family would resent the bequest and that it would make them suspicious of me and my motives. They're not going to listen to anything I say. But I hope you will.
What else?
Quickly, Harris outlined the attack on Sirkin and Irulan and what she had found out about its background, including the dishonesty of Cecilia's former captain and the loot found aboard the yacht at Tacaman Roads.
So you see, I worry that her stroke was drug-induced. The guilty parties are working for the Compassionate Hand in retaliation for having their comfortable little smuggling ring disrupted.
Oh, my.
Brun's face shifted from one expression to another, fluffhead to practical young woman, as she thought about this.
Is that what Ronnie meant when he said his aunt had been to see the king? Was she complaining to him about the regular space service, perhaps? It wasn't stopping smugglers, but it had dumped you and promoted that horrible admiral.
Perhaps.
Harris didn't want to mention the prince if it could be avoided. That was another motive for an attack, but one that she had no way of investigating.
My thought was this. It's not unknown for the Compassionate Hand to suborn medical professionals. There was a case in the Chisholm system where doctors certified that someone was paralyzed when he was only drugged. It was meant to terrorize business associates, which it did, and of course it was also terrifying for the victim.
Who had died before he could be rescued, but the evidence had been clear enough. The RSS had found the cube records of the drugging and the results.
If you can visit Lady Cecilia without arousing suspicions, and without it seeming to be my suggestion, perhaps you can ascertain if she really is brain damaged or not. We can set up a discreet way to keep in touch.
I see. I suppose you don't have any outrageously handsome young men in your crew, do you, that I could pretend to have fallen for on the voyage?
No. In fact, all those people quit. The only crew member from the voyage you were on is my navigator, Brigdis Sirkin, and she just suffered a loss herself. Her lover was killed in that brawl.
Oh, yes. I remember you telling me about her. I think I'd like to meet her. It would be in my character, even as Bubbles, to be wildly sympathetic.
She's not expendable, Brun. I don't want her hurt.
I won't hurt her. I'm not that stupid. I'm sorry she lost someone she cared about. That's true. And I will be careful. But I can call her or meet her, even though she's your crew, if there's a good reason for me to be interested otherwise.
Just be careful. She's a good person. And I'll have to ask her.
Not even for Cecilia would she expose Sirkin's pain without her permission.
Let's see. Why not have her escort you to the storage company tomorrow, assuming you really should carry out that errand? And I'll have briefed her on the situation. And then it's up to the two of you to make it understandable that you'd keep in touch.
It's always understandable when rich young people and not so rich young people start spending time together.
Brun modified her fluffhead persona just slightly the next main shift. She appeared at the crew hostel without the pink-tipped spiky hairstyle, opting for a swept-back poof instead, all the pink ends hidden under an elaborate ribbon arrangement. She wore a more conservative outfit, something she might have worn a year ago in like circumstance. Her heart was pounding. She hoped that she'd find young Sirkin in the hostel lounge, and not Captain Serrano. She liked Captain Serrano, but it was a strain trying to impress her, knowing she wasn't going to succeed, having to try anyway. Sirkin and another crew member, a blonde woman with sleepy green eyes, waited at the desk. Brun barely remembered Sirkin. The slender, dark-haired figure was only vaguely familiar. The other she didn't know at all.
Cam Serrano had other things to do this morning. I'm Methlin Mahari, and this is Briggs Sirkin. Captain said we should escort you to the storage company.
Yes, well.
She had planned to ask Sirkin to call her Brun, but what about this Mahari? She didn't feel like using her title, and she was getting very tired of Bubbles. The older woman's sleepy green eyes seemed to wake, like a cat's.
It's all right. I have the paperwork.
Fine. Then let's go.
If you couldn't figure out what else to do, you could always be rude. On the way, she turned to Sirkin.
Captain Serrano told me you'd been hurt in a brawl, and your friend was killed. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Sirkin's eyes were clouded. Brun felt like an idiot, a cruel one. This was much harder with Mahari along. She glared at Mahari. Mahari gave her a lazy smile.
She was damn near killed herself. Don't suppose you rich girls ever have to worry about things like that. Always got protection.
That's not fair, Methlin. She was nearly killed in that mess at Cerealis.
Sirkin looked at Brunn, who suddenly realized Harris had used her own trick on her. Of course they had set up this quarrel on purpose.
Nonsense. It was her dad's place. How much danger could she be in?
Quite enough, thank you. Sirkin was there. She knows.
And you call her like a servant. Sirkin? She has a name, you know, Miss Priss.
Methlin!
It would be impolite of me to use her first name without her permission. And I don't think much of you either.
Captain told me to come. You can't make me leave.
I'm not trying to make you leave. I'm merely trying to make you observe the rudiments of polite behavior.
Brunn hoped Mahari realized she, too, was playing the role. The woman scared her.
Damn snob.
Brunn pretended not to hear it. She smiled unctuously at Sirkin.
I'm so sorry. Truly. It must have been terrible for you. Captain Serrano always praised you so highly.
It was... She jumped in front of me.
Brunn felt another pang of guilt. All too clearly, she remembered how she and Rafa had felt each other's peril as well as their own.
When my friend and I were being shot at, we were as scared for each other. Once she had to shoot the man who had me at gunpoint, and she was afraid she'd hit me.
Sirkin blinked back tears. Brunn wanted to hug her.
You do understand. But your friend lived. Was that George?
George? No, not George. Rafa. She was the dark-haired one, like you.
It suddenly occurred to Brunn that Sirkin might misunderstand something here, but it was not the time to clarify the order of events and feelings.
Our stop's next!
Brunn looked up and led the way out into the concourse and then into the storage company's main office. For the next couple of hours, as the bored and contemptuous storage company workers located and unpacked half a dozen boxes from Lady Cecilia's yacht, to no avail, Mahari made sarcastic remarks about the aristocracy, and Sirkin became Brunn's natural ally. Finally, Brunn agreed that she must have been mistaken. She cheerfully handed over a credit chip to cover the extra work done on her behalf, and murmured to Sirkin that she'd really like to take her to lunch if Mahari would let her come. By then, it seemed natural that Mahari, with a few last caustic comments about the aristocracy, would head back to the crew quarters alone.
You know, if you want to talk about it, I really am a safe person to tell. I'm not quite the fluffhead I seem.
I know. Captain Serrano said you had to be pretty tough to survive on the island.
But if you don't want to, that's fine too. What's your favorite food?
After a luxurious lunch, they spent the afternoon showing why not-so-rich girls like to spend time with rich ones. Brunn found it more fun than she expected to take Sirkin to one shop after another, buying her more gifts than she could carry. She had long quit calling her Sirkin. They were Brig and Brunn. Neither mentioned Lady Cecilia that afternoon. Neither needed to. Wakening after wakening. Time lost all meaning in the dark, with only ears and nose to accept sensory data and offer meat for Cecilia's thoughts. And the only smells around were artificial, soaps and perfumes and medicines, nothing evocative of her old life. She had read about such things, but never imagined herself so cut off. She, who had been a sensualist all her life. She tried to tell herself that at least she felt no pain, but she would have traded pain for that nothingness that threatened her mind. She would not go insane. She would not give whomever had done this the satisfaction. She told herself she was lucky to be old, that the old had more memories to process, more experiences to relive. She worked her way through her own life, trying to be methodical. It was hard. She would like to have spent more time in the good years on the winning rides, when the jumps flowed by under the flashing hooves. But even in her extraordinary life, those moments were brief compared to the whole. Instead, she tried to concentrate on the duller bits.
Just how many tons of hay did I order that first winter in Hamley? How many tons of oats, of barley? Which horse required flaxseed to improve its hooves? What was the name of that farrier who slipped information to the Cosgroves? Was the third groom's name Alicia or Devra?
Not even the horses were enough. She made herself catalog her wardrobe. Not only every garment she owned now, but every garment in every closet since childhood.
Was that blue velvet robe a gift for the summer fair or winter fest? And was it Aunt Clarice or Aunt Jalora? When and where did I buy that raw silk shirt with the embroidered capelet? What happened to the Uzik skin boots or the beaded belt from Talik?
She tried to remember every room she'd walked in, placing the furniture and every ornament. She considered every investment, from the first shares of bank stock she'd bought herself, with a Winterfest gift from her grandfather. He had forbidden her to spend the money on horses, or she would have bought a new Kindle Flex saddle, to the most recent argument with her proxy. Visitors came regularly in this unnamed place. Berenice, first teary and chattery, reminded by the staff that she should not get hysterical, that she could not bring flowers or food, and her husband, Gustav, stiff, ponderous, but gentle when he touched her hand, and even young Ronnie. They talked to her, in a way. Berenice talked of their childhood. This birthday party, that incident at school, a long-forgotten playmate or servant. And she explained, at excruciating length, why she thought Cecilia had been a fool to waste all that time on horses instead of getting married, or at least working in the family. She had accepted the idea that years of small head injuries from riding had led to a massive stroke. Gustav talked of business and politics, but not in a way she could use.
What do I care if Siskan Pharmaceuticals is up 1/8 point and Barhide Royal is down 3/4? Or if the Conservative Social Democrats have won 2 more seats in the lower house while the Liberal Royalists have gained a critical appointment in the Bureau of Education?
Of course, Gustav had never been known for lively repartee, but even he might have realized that someone in a coma is hardly likely to understand the nuances of a field they never mastered while awake. Ronnie spent the first visit saying what she had hoped to hear, that he could not believe that his vital, strong, healthy aunt had been stricken like this. He was sure she was alert inside, listening to him, understanding him. He would never believe Captain Serrano had done this. How could she? And it would all come right in the end. But she could not communicate anything to him, could not confirm his guess. And gradually, he settled into what she thought of as useless small talk. He was no longer in exile, of course. The prince was off-planet somewhere. Rafaela had gone to visit her family before he had actually talked to her about marriage. The royals seemed rather slack after his adventures on Cerealis. George was back to being odious in the regiment, but came out of it when alone with Ronnie. This was better than Gustav, but it didn't give her much to work with when he'd gone. And none of them thought to tell her the date, the weather, or even where she was, the things that might have kept her oriented. It wasn't enough. Still, she woke into blankness, helpless and afraid, and at times could not force her mind to work through another memory. The brilliant colors of blood bay and golden chestnut, of the sunlight on a cobbled yard, or a red coat against dark woods, began to gray. She had heard of that. The deep blindness that follows blinding when the memory of color fades. She could still think yellow and red and blue and green, but the images that came were paler, almost transparent. Worst were the nightmares when she seemed to wake to a hand cold and smooth as porcelain laid along her cheek.
I did it.
Who could be so cruel?
Meharry had returned to the crew quarters, spitting fire against Brunn for the benefit of anyone in the public lounge. When Sirkin went to lunch with Brunn again the next day, and then to a concert, Meharry took it up with Harris in public.
That spoiled kid is making a fool out of Sirkin. Taking her out, buying her expensive presents. And poor Sirkin, she's not over Amelie yet.
I know. I don't like her any better than you do, but we have no right to interfere. If it gets Sirkin's mind off her grief, maybe...
It's not healthy. It's not as if they could have a real relationship. Not someone like that. Daughter's some guy too rich to know how many planets he owns.
Now, wait a minute. That's not fair. I met Lord Thornbuckle. He's a friend of Lady Cecilia's, our employer, you may recall. I'll admit this youngest daughter is something of a problem, but she may grow out of it.
Might. Does Sirkin talk to you about it?
No, and I wish she did. You're right, she could get in over her head. She's had no experience with that sort of wealth and privilege. But I can't stop her. Her free time is her own.
Finally, after a whirlwind week, Brunn went back down planet. To Meharry's expressed surprise, she kept up almost daily calls or correspondence with Sirkin. One of the men in the lounge one afternoon had heard more than he wanted of Meharry's complaints about Brunn and thought he understood the reason behind them.
Could really be love. Maybe you're just jealous.
The rich don't love. They buy. Of course I'm not jealous. I'm too old for her, and besides, she's not my type. I just don't want to see her get hurt. She's setting up for it.
Sirkin walked in on that. They had set up this conversation before, but had no takers.
I wish you'd mind your own business, Meharry. Just because you were nice to me after Amelie died doesn't mean you own me now.
The man gave a satisfied grin as Sirkin stalked on out the door. Meharry shook her head and returned to her quarters. After several weeks, Harris got the first piece of solid news through her pipeline. Brunn had permission to visit Cecilia, but it had taken a request from her father back on Cerealis to get it. Right now, Cecilia was being prepared for long-term care, which meant a series of small surgeries. She could not visit until Cecilia had been placed in the permanent care facility her family had chosen. In the meantime, Cecilia's family had begun the first moves against Harris herself. At the hearing to petition for an order of guardianship, Cecilia's will had been formally read, and the bequest to Harris noted with dismay by those who hadn't already heard. The first notice she got was a call from a court officer who informed her that she was now the official owner of the Sweet Delight, and court documents to that effect were on the way. Scarcely 2 hours later, a station militia officer, not the captain she knew from the murder investigation, showed up to question her about circumstances pursuant to Lady Cecilia's stroke.
I don't know anything about it except what Ronnie told me.
He peered at a printout she couldn't read upside down and backwards.
You weren't there?
No. I haven't been down planet since we came back to Rockhouse. Lady Cecilia has been back up only once, some days before her stroke. She seemed fine then.
Tell me about it.
Harris explained about the redecoration of the yacht, about Cecilia's ability to make quick, firm decisions on matters of color and style, about her cheerful mood.
You don't think having her yacht redone so soon, and in a style so different from what's in fashion, reveals, perhaps, that her mind was already going?
Not at all. Lady Cecilia was not your average old lady, but she seemed every bit as competent and alert as she was when she first hired me. She had never liked the colors her sister chose before. She'd decided to redo the yacht her way. She could afford it. Why not?
Was she on any medication?
Not that I know of.
You don't think her, euphoric mood might have been the result of some drug?
Hardly. It wasn't euphoric, just happy. She didn't use drugs for mood control. She felt that she was a happy, fit, healthy individual who didn't need them.
She had refused rejuvenation.
She told me that she thought people went into rejuvenation from either fear of death or vanity. She wasn't afraid of death, and she thought vanity was a silly vice.
Harris saw no need to mention that she didn't agree about rejuvenation. It wouldn't convince the man of her innocence or Cecilia's wit.
She seems to have told you a lot. You hadn't been working for her that long.
True, I hadn't. But living alone on that yacht as she did, perhaps she found another woman, younger but not juvenile, a comfortable companion. So it seemed.
I see. I might as well tell you. Questions have been asked about you. Someone down there is setting up to make trouble. I hope you know what you're doing.
If there had been the least scrap of evidence that she had had any physical contact with Cecilia in the days before her stroke, or any way to get drugs to her, she would have been arrested for attempted murder. That became clear in the next few days when the militia asked for repeated interviews and Cecilia's family's lawyers and the court officers descended. Luckily, the medical evidence suggested that if, it could not be proven, Cecilia's stroke had resulted from poison, the poison would have to have been administered shortly before her collapse. Repeated questioning of her maid and her sister revealed nothing into which Harris could have put such a drug. No medicines taken regularly, no foodstuffs brought down from the ship. Records at the Royal Docks access showed that Lady Cecilia had not even been to her ship on her last visit to the space station. Harris remembered her protest and wondered if Cecilia had had some sort of intuitive knowledge. Against the animosity of Cecilia's sister and the rest of the family, however, evidence meant little. They had petitioned the court at once to set aside the bequest to Harris on the grounds of undue influence. Perhaps they couldn't prove an assault, but they were sure of the undue influence. Ronnie sent word through Brunn that he dared not call Harris directly. They were already recommending treatment for him on the grounds that he, too, might have been under her supposed spell. It would have been funny in a story about someone else. Harris found it infuriating and painful. How could anyone think she would hurt Cecilia? She had begun to love the old woman as if she were her own aunt. No, as a friend. She felt hollow inside at the thought of losing her forever.
They think I did this to her, Petrus.
Harris looked up from the cube reader with the latest communication from the family's legal staff.
To get the ship. They think I influenced her to change her will. I didn't even know she'd changed her will.
I know that. Don't bristle at me.
They think that I did it all for the ship, which is why they're insisting that I can't have it.
Well, screw the ship. We can go back to the service.
I'm not so sure. We refused their kind invitation. They may not be willing to have us now. And to find a berth, all of us, somewhere else?
Harris shook her head. It had all seemed to be coming together. A new direction, not only possible, but rewarding.
Well, we're still Lady Cecilia's employees. As long as we're her employees, we have a right to work on her ship.
You know, that's another thing. Since she's believed to be permanently impaired, they say there's no reason to maintain an expensive and useless ship crew. When the yacht's ownership has been determined in court, then it can be crewed with whomever the new owner wants. We're supposed to get out and stay out.
But you're the designated owner, aren't you?
Were you listening, Oblo? The family's petitioned the court to have that part of the will thrown out. Cecilia's own attorney, who drew up the new will, argues that it is an unreasonable bequest to an employee so recent. Apparently all of them think I did something, what they don't say, to influence the bequest. And some of them think I then did whatever it was that's happened to her.
Which we aren't sure about.
Which I am sure isn't just a stroke. I told her she was going into danger, but that's beside the point. This letter says we'll be paid through the end of that 60 days they first promised. Be glad I got that in writing. And then we're no longer her employees. They're canceling the redecoration permanently. They want the ship in deep storage until final disposition. I'm supposed to present my own petition to the court, at my own expense, of course, if I want to contest the petition. They think I'll walk away.
Well, what else can you do? You don't have the money for an attorney. We've been depending on your lady.
It'll split us up. That's what they want. We'll have to ship out separately because no one hires ready-made crews, especially not us. I don't like this.
It's not fair.
Everyone looked at Sirkin. Oblo raised one scarred eyebrow.
Fair? You're a grown-up now, Sirkin. Another voyage and you'll be almost family.
Harris felt her mind slumping even as she held her body erect.
Except there isn't going to be another voyage. We don't have the resources. The family's offered me a settlement, not to contest. It's enough for a couple of months living on Rockhouse Minor, but not for all of us. Not nearly enough for a ship.
For tickets away?
Yes, but where? Besides, I don't want to leave Cecilia down there until I know what happened. Maybe even more if I did know what happened. I have savings, of course. Investments. Maybe enough to contest it, but not if they bring criminal charges for whatever it was that happened to her. They're powerful enough, they might be able to do it even without evidence. Since she didn't tell me about the bequest, I wasn't prepared. I don't even know why she did it. But I do have legal help. Remember that young man, George?
Kevin Mahoney's taking your case?
No, not himself, but he's recommended someone, and the fee's not as bad as it could be. The problem is, he thinks the settlement might be reasonable, And in any case, he says we must comply with the court order to vacate. I asked about that old possession is 9/10 you always hear about, and he says it has never applied to space vessels. And of course, we're not actually in the yacht. She's sitting over there in Space Enhance, empty.
With Space Enhance grumbling almost daily about having one of their slots tied up uselessly. If it hadn't been for the Royal connection, they'd have insisted on having the ship moved long before.
And it'll cost us to live.
If we can't get other work.
Like what? Dockside work on Rockhouse Major's simply not available for ship certified. They don't want crews spending time here for political reasons. Downside? Who wants to work on a dirt ball anyway?
You're not looking at this as a tactical problem. Think of Lady Cecilia. We have to stay mobile if we're to help her at all. If we're trapped, whether it's broke or working for someone else or in custody, we can't help her.
You mean get her out? I like that. We could get a shuttle.
We don't know for certain that she's a prisoner. If she's really had a massive stroke, if she's really comatose, we can't just snatch her away from medical care. But if she's not...
If she's been disabled?
Yes. Then she needs allies who aren't bound by the usual considerations.
Rules, laws, even traditions.
We need a ship.
Harris felt the challenge in Petrus's gaze. She grinned back at him.
We have a ship. It is highly illegal, and we will be fugitive criminals, the lawful prey of every RSS ship, every planetary militia. But we have a ship.
Not quite. You haven't forgotten she's over in refitting, with all her pretty carpets and plush walls gutted?
And all her new weaponry aboard. What do we care what the decks and bulkheads look like?
You're actually going to do it. You, Harris Serrano, are actually going to steal a yacht and set off to rescue a friend in peril. Do you realize how theatrical this is?
It will be even more theatrical when the shooting starts. And we can't just leap into it. We need to know exactly what her condition is. Sweet Delight's not a planetary shuttle. We can't use it to snatch her, even if it's safe to do so. We'll have to find someone with a shuttle first.
Harris remembered Ronnie saying that both his family and Lord Thornbuckle had private shuttles on planet, but didn't mention it to the crew. Not yet. She would have Sirkin check with Brunn at their next encounter.
It's not working. No one will ever come. No one will ever figure it out. If they were going to, they'd have gotten me out by now. And I can't go on like this for years and years. It would be better to go mad and not know anymore.
Cecilia fought herself on that, in the motionless silence, screaming curses at her fears, as she had never allowed herself to scream in real life. For a short time, the discovery that she had remembered so many expletives that ladies were not supposed to notice amused her. A fine talent for curses, she thought. But it was useless. No one could hear them. She forced herself back to the dry bones of accounting. Tons of hay, price of oats and bran, the cost of bits and saddles, as her hope dwindled.
How long?
Then one wakening, she found herself flooded with emotion. Not the usual fear, but joy so strong she could hardly believe she did not leap from the bed.
What?
A smell, a rich, natural scent, overlay the room's usual sterility. Leather, conditioning oil, not quite the smell of a saddle, but certainly one associated with riding. Horse and dog. Cautiously, afraid to respond now because someone might withdraw that aroma, Cecilia sniffed.
It's so sad to see her this way.
A voice she knew from before. She struggled to put a name to it. Young female, not family. Who was this?
She loved the out-of-doors so. I'm sure they did everything they could.
Oh, of course.
A pressure against her cheek and the scent grew stronger. Her mind drank it in gratefully. Leather, oil, horse, dog, sweat. A hand that had been outdoors?
No, a hand alone wouldn't carry that scent. A glove would. A young woman wearing gloves? Why? Gloves aren't in fashion. Unless I've been mired here so long that fashion has changed again.
But I don't understand why I couldn't bring flowers. She always loved flowers, especially the aromatic ones. It smells so Ugh, so sterile in here.
Strong scents interfere with the room monitoring.
Oh, dear. And here I came straight from the track. Should I have showered?
No, because you're just visiting. The blowers will clear it out shortly. Now I'll leave you. Just a half hour, please, and check at the main desk on your way out.
Thank you.
As Cecilia listened to the familiar soft noises of the doors, the hand never left her cheek. Then, at the final distant click of the outer door, it did.
Cecilia, it's Brunn, Bunny's daughter. Dad wanted me to visit you. He couldn't believe what happened.
Bubbles, Brunn.
For a moment, her mind tangled the two names. Then she remembered, with utter clarity, their last conversation.
If you have anything left at all, it's olfactory. I saw your nose flare with this.
The smell came back and Cecilia rejoiced.
I'm going to try some things, smells, and see if you can respond. That was my glove. I rubbed it all over two horses and the stable dog today.
I knew that.
Cecilia could hardly focus on what Brunn was saying. She wanted to cry, scream, and laugh all at once. The familiar, beloved scents faded, replaced now by a fruity tang.
Apple. I'm not supposed to have food in here. I think it's because they don't want you to smell it. I think they know you can.
Cecilia struggled to move something, anything, and felt a firm pressure on her arm.
You twitched an eyelid. If you can do it again, I'll take that as a yes.
Cecilia tried. She could not feel if she succeeded, but Brunn gave her another squeeze.
Good. Now, I'm going to pretend you can hear me, because my aunt said sometimes people in comas could hear you.
Of course I can hear. I just did what you asked me to do.
Then Cecilia realized that Brunn might be dealing with another kind of monitoring. She had to make this look like an innocent visit.
So, I'm going to tell you about the last hunt after you left. You know, I've always wondered what it would be like to be the fox.
A sharp stink of fox entered Cecilia's brain like a knife, clearing away the fog of anger.
Foxes are so cunning, clever beasts. I'll bet ours are smarter than old earth foxes ever were. But it must be scary, down there in the dark holes, hearing the hounds coming at the gate.
This time, a smell of dog and another squeeze. Cecilia struggled to comprehend. Brunn was trying to tell her something, something important, but she was too old, too tired, too confused.
Foxes? Hounds? Foxes in dark holes, like I am. With the hounds up there somewhere.
She could almost feel her mind coming alive now, and hoped that no brainwave monitor was on her at this moment.
Anyway, there was this kid who decided that the hunt was unfair to foxes. Too easy for us, too hard for them. His first season, he's one of the Delstanden cousins, I think. So, he decided to help the fox. He understood that hounds followed the scent, so he figured if he made a false trail, we'd waste our time and the foxes would have a day off.
The alternation of fox and dog scent fit with this story. Cecilia wondered where it would lead.
But to get the fox scent, he had to find foxes himself, a den. And you can imagine what happened when Dad's huntsman found him lurking around a den.
Cecilia couldn't, but she concentrated on breaking Brunn's code. The huntsman had been signaled with the glove again. She recognized that particular mix now, as well as the constituent scents.
I thought it was kind of funny, protecting the foxes from someone who wanted to protect them.
Again, the stink of fox.
But I guess that happens sometimes.
Now a different smell, woodsy and soothing. Change of topic?
I was thinking back to the island.
Yes, change of topic indeed.
Cecilia found her memory of the island fragmented. She hoped Brunn wouldn't depend on something no longer there.
It was such fun camping there when I was a child. Now I don't know if I'll ever feel the same way about it.
This time the smell was oily, dangerous yet attractive. Not leather, metallic plus oil plus some chemical. Abruptly she recognized it. How had Brunn smuggled a weapon in here? Or was it just a cloth saturated with the smell of gun oil and ammunition? It meant danger, she was sure of that.
Oh, I wish I knew if she even heard me. My aunt says sometimes they can, but she doesn't do anything.
I need to check the monitors.
Do you think she hears anyone?
No, miss. The scans don't show anything. The doctors think she's completely comatose. I just need to check this.
Cecilia felt pressure on her head. Then a sparkle ran through her brain, bringing up a vivid picture of her own gloved hands clasped on her knee. Then it was gone.
That's all right, then. The supervisor thought I'd better check.
What?
Well, I suspect it has all that smell of horse you brought in. It seems to have clogged the monitors or something.
Sorry, Mum said to come today, and I almost forgot. I didn't have time to clean up first or anything.
You're another horse whoop?
Not like her. To tell the truth, I'm fonder of the jockeys than the horses. But I always pat the horses. The trainers like that.
Well, your time's almost up.
I know. I don't suppose it matters, really. She can't hear me, and she certainly doesn't respond. Why should I stay the whole time anyway? Is her family visiting?
Oh, yes, miss. Her sister and brother-in-law and nephew every week. Each has a special day. If you're going to visit regularly, you should put yourself on the weekly schedule. That way, the receptionist will have your tag ready, and the gate guard will have you on the list.
Oh, I don't think so. I've known her all my life, of course, but she's not my aunt. I mean, I care, but, you know, it's not like, you know.
Yes, miss.
I mean, I might come again before we go back to Siri Alice. I suppose I should, but not like every week or anything.
The wonderful smell of horse and dog and leather came back as Brunn laid her hand on Cecilia's cheek again.
Goodbye, Lady Cecilia. I'm so sorry, but your friends haven't forgotten you. You'll always have a place in the hunt.
Cecilia felt Brunn's warm lips on her face. A goodbye kiss. Someone knew at last. Someone believed. Someone outside, someone free, knew she was still alive inside and would do something about it. What she could not imagine, or how, or when, but something. Cecilia wanted to laugh, to cry, to leap and shout for joy. Her immobility hurt worse then than it had for a long time. But hope always hurt, she remembered. Hope gave the chance of failure, as well as the chance of success. She clung to that hope in the timeless dark that followed, as she replayed her memories again and again. Somewhere, sometime, someone would come and take her away from this, into the smell of horse and dog and fox, the real world. Brunn invited Sirkin to dinner. Sirkin wore, to Meharry's voluble disapproval, an expensive outfit Brunn had bought for her. Harris paced in her own small room, waiting for Sirkin to return with some word of Cecilia's condition. Petrus lounged as usual on her bed.
She'll be late. We could improve the shining hour.
And be interrupted again? No, thank you. Afterward.
Afterward didn't happen. Sirkin didn't come back until next main shift, arms laden with packages bearing the logos of expensive stores, and her expression clearly that of someone whose needs had been satisfied. Brunn came with her, wearing matching earrings and a smug look. Harris had begun to wonder if something had happened to them, and she felt almost irritated.
Sirkin, you were supposed to be back last midshift.
Oh, it's my fault. Well, it was easier for her to spend the night, and then we overslept.
I see, miss. Sirkin, if you could get yourself into uniform, we are having crew training this shift.
Yes, Captain.
Sirkin accepted a last squeeze from Brunn and went off to her quarters with the load of presents. Brunn waved an irreverent goodbye to Harris.
I hope you haven't made promises you aren't prepared to keep.
Not me. I never make promises at all.
Sirkin handed Harris the scrawled note later. Yes, she's there. They won't let you near her. I'll work something out. Don't worry. Brunn. Don't worry. How could she not worry? Yet, if she herself couldn't rescue Cecilia, and she had not been able to come up with a viable plan for getting her out of the nursing home and away from the planet, she would bet on Brunn. They'd just have to figure out a way to have the ship where Brunn needed it, if that meant stealing it, and hiding out somewhere in the meantime. The Crown summons arrived by hand, the hand being a member of the household in a formal uniform that no one could overlook. Harris took the summons warily. Old-fashioned, imprinted paper, the strokes of a real pen having scored the thick textured paper with black letters, and wondered what now. Not that it mattered. A Crown summons had the force of law, although no legislation supported it. It was simply inconceivable that someone invited to an audience would refuse. She noted the time and the clothing required. A shuttle awaited her. She could not help but think of Cecilia riding a royal shuttle down, and where Cecilia was now. She suspected she was meant to think of that. The messenger waited in the private meeting room while she changed into her formal uniform. Not as formal as the dress uniform of Fleet, but it would have to do, and told Petrus where she was going and why. His brow furrowed.
You might be going into trouble. One of us should come.
If there's trouble in that direction, one wouldn't help. No, you stay free. Here's the authorization codes for the bank and the lockboxes. Take care of them.
As she left, his hand lifted in the old salute. Make no promises you can't keep. Keep the ones you make. The old words ran through her mind as she walked beside the messenger and saw how passers-by reacted.
We have a problem.
The king looked much like his son Gerald, only older. Was he as foolish? Harris could not let herself think so. If the king had also been damaged, she could see no hope for any but the conspirators who had done it. He paused, and she wasn't sure if it was for her response or a decision.
You have already, with Lady Cecilia, been of service to the crown.
Considering that her entire adult life had been spent as a Fleet officer, this was, Harris thought, an understatement.
You know Gerald, both as himself and as Mr. Smith. You know the problem he has developed.
Yes, sir.
It was all Harris could say, really. She was glad that the Familius had never taken up the full formality of address of past historical periods.
You are in a position to do the crown and the Familius Regnant a great service, if you will.
Of course, sir. It would be a privilege.
Provided it didn't take too long or take her away from Lady Cecilia. She was still determined to find a way to help.
It is a very delicate matter, possibly quite dangerous. I would not consider asking you were it not for your military background, your proven courage, and your discretion.
Which meant it was not just delicate and dangerous, but impossible. Others had been asked, and refused, most likely.
And I will understand if you feel you cannot jeopardize your crew, or if the legal difficulties you face require your immediate presence and participation.
Perhaps if you could tell me a bit more.
Let me be frank, Captain Serrano. I know, of course, your situation vis-a-vis the Belinvaux-Barraclough family. Lady Cecilia left you her yacht in her will. Her relatives contest her mental fitness at the time of the bequest and have charged you with undue influence. They have sufficient standing that the court has agreed to deny you access to the ship while the matter is under adjudication. You turned out to have unexpected monetary resources and unexpectedly good legal advice, thanks to the debt Kevil Mahoney owes you for the life of his son. You may win in the end, but in the meantime you have, unless you find other employment, no income, nor will your crew.
All this, though Harris knew it, sounded grimmer from his mouth than she'd allowed herself to think.
They think you're a greedy, sly woman, capable of insinuating yourself into the affections of an elderly spinster, and possibly capable of doing her actual harm by precipitating a stroke.
He stared at her a long moment, then held up his hand when she opened her mouth.
No, don't answer that. I disagree with them, in part because I've known Ceci all my life, and when she came to talk to me about Gerald, I got an earful about you as well. I've known Ceci, as I said, and she's never been taken in by anyone charming since she was 16 or so. Yeah. She's a superb, if acerbic, judge of character. She's located and remarked on all my failings. Ceci thought you were a rare find, and I abide by her judgment. That's another reason for my request.
Harris tried not to shift about in her chair. She was glad to know the king trusted Cecilia's judgment, but she wished he would get to the point. She distrusted easy compliments and indirection.
Now, without going into all the historical tangles, we've got a mess, the entire Familius Regnant. You saw Gerald's problem. It's not innate. I'm sure you know that many prominent people have doubles.
I had heard of that, sir.
No one knows how many of the heads and heirs of prominent families have them, of course. In the military, except for covert operations, regulations prohibit them for any but flag officers in major military actions. Otherwise, we'd be stumbling all over extra Lieutenants Smith and Brown whenever the real ones wanted to spend an extra 30 days on leave. You can understand, I hope, that the royal family is well supplied with doubles, both for convenience and security. In fact, that's how Admiral Lupescu got Gerald away from Navan without anyone noticing. One of his doubles was there. We're claiming that it was one of his doubles who went to Cerealis, although I'm afraid Bunny won't believe it.
I see.
Harris wondered for a moment if the foolish young man could have been the prince's double. She didn't know the prince, after all. And the crown would have had to respond as if he were, even if he weren't. In that case, maybe only the double was stupid, if the king was telling the truth. It shocked her to realize how she doubted him. The king steepled his hands.
Captain Serrano, I must admit, in confidence, that the person you met as Mr. Smith was, in fact, the prince. The real prince. He is now back on Navan, and his double is safely back in hiding. That's not the problem. As I said, his infirmity is not natural, not inborn, and it was induced in much the same way as I think Ceci's stroke was induced. I knew about it, of course, from the beginning. It was the threat. They'd killed Jared, his oldest brother.
Harris remembered that, the assassination of the eldest prince, when she was serving aboard the Stella Maris. The whole fleet had gone on alert, expecting some kind of rebellion, but nothing happened.
Until then, I hadn't used doubles much, certainly not for the children. After that, with Gerald, we switched him around quite a bit. They were proving they could still find him and hurt him without the public scandal of another death.
Do you know who?
We have three or four major possibilities. You're not a political fool. You can probably figure them out for yourself.
What do you want me to do?
Harris wasn't about to speculate about politics. It wasn't her field. Moreover, it was obvious that the king himself or his faction must be among the possibilities.
I daren't trust any medical facility in the Familius. But beyond the compassionate hand, there's the Gurney Republic. They have the best medical facilities in known space. They trade in biomedical knowledge and skill. I want you to take Gerald there and see if his condition can be treated or reversed without killing him. I have his entire medical file. The people responsible actually gave me some of the details to prove they'd done it. Our specialists say they can't do anything without causing permanent damage, even death. I need you. Because I dare not send him by fleet or commercial vessel. Not only would his condition become known, but those responsible would surely intervene. I had planned to ask Ceci if she'd been willing to do it, but then she had a stroke. If it was a stroke.
You want me to steal the yacht out from under the noses of the family, against all law and regulation, and go to Navern and take the prince from there to the Gwerny Republic, which is some dozen worlds around two or three stars, if I recall, to attempt a treatment you know nothing about? Begging your pardon, but that seems a very strange proposal.
Of course it does. It is a strange proposal. Dangerous.
Suicidal. We'll be outlaws here for having taken the ship when it was under legal dispute. And since we've taken it out of the system, the RSS will be after us as well. It is essential for your plan that we not be known as your agents, and thus you cannot keep the wolves off our track. We can circumvent the compassionate hand. It just takes longer. But how are we supposed to pick up the prince when every ship will know we're fugitives already?
Actually, that wasn't such a problem. Oblo had already set up an alternate identity for the Sweet Delight. But the king needn't know that.
As for the Gwenny Republic, exactly where did you expect us to deliver the prince? And how long might the treatment take? And suppose it doesn't work. What will happen then? And beyond all that, there's Lady Cecilia. Why should I leave her in peril among those I cannot trust?
Your oath of service, I could have said once. But I see you do not feel bound at all by that anymore.
That stung. Harris felt her teeth grating, but said nothing. She had not broken that oath. Others had broken their trust, had failed her.
If I swore to see that Lady Cecilia was protected, that no further harm came to her, assuming that harm has been done.
With all due respect, since I do not know what happened, I do not know whom to blame. I'm sure you intended no harm in the first place, and yet it happened.
I see.
Harris could almost see the ideas shuffling through his head like a pack of cards. It was an impossible mission, and she would be crazy to accept it. Except, what choice did she have? If she refused it and stayed here, the family would put the yacht in deep storage, and her own savings would go to support her and as many of the crew as wanted to stay. She might get other employment, but not with her people, and rumors that she was responsible for Lady Cecilia's condition might keep her unemployed the rest of her life. Without a shuttle, and not even Oblo had found a way to obtain a shuttle secretly, she couldn't get Cecilia off-planet. A ship and a mission, even this mission, was better than nothing.
You do realize that you cannot help Lady Cecilia yourself. She is well guarded, against you in particular. If she has a chance for recovery, it would be with someone else.
Harris nodded, dry-mouthed.
If you were gone, perhaps the level of suspicion would drop. Not that that would help her physical condition, but like you, I hate to think of her living the rest of her time in what must seem like confinement.
The look he gave her then had years of manipulation behind it. Was she cowed enough? Had she taken the bait of that implied promise? Harris stared back at him, almost regretting those years of loyal service. But no, it meant something to her, something she still treasured.
I will give you letters patent. I believe I can trust you not to reveal them, except in direst need.
When, thought Harris, they wouldn't be worth the elegant old-fashioned paper they were written on, no matter its cost. She could just imagine a compassionate-hand pirate merchant holding its fire because of a piece of pressed slush fiber with writing on it. This, like his assurance that he would protect Cecilia, could not be trusted. But her doubts would do her no good. She made herself smile at the king.
Sir, I accept your mission.
At least it meant a ship, a chance, another short space of freedom. And she might, she would, find some way to help Cecilia. Perhaps, as the king implied, if she were gone, the family would let down their guard. The first glimmer of an idea came to her, but she forced it back. She didn't want anything to show in her face. The king sat alone with his uncertainties. He would have liked to confide in that captain, explain all the knots in the tangled mess that had led to Gerald's situation and Cecilia's. He had never meant it to turn out like this. It hadn't been his idea anyway, not the clones or the drugs. He had only wanted to avert another disaster after the deaths of his two older sons. But it was far too late for easy honesty. Harris explained the Crown mission with as little expression in her voice as possible. She had assembled the crew in a private lounge of a respectable hotel, as she'd done at weekly intervals all along, and Oblo had turned on one of his gadgets before she started to speak. Sirkin opened her mouth twice, but subsided. The rest of the crew stared at her without expression.
You realize the whole thing is a trap?
Of course, but we don't have to walk into the trap.
I thought we just did.
So does the Crown. Safer that way. What do you think they'd do if I refused the bait? kill us off one by one like Sirkin's friend, and certainly finish Lady Cecilia. I don't like that solution. But we're vulnerable as long as we're tied to a ship in dock, and weak if we separate. No. We're going to take their bait. Then we're going to pick up the whole trap and walk off with it.
How?
I don't know yet, but that's the plan.
All strategy, no tactics. Unless just staying out of whatever trap they've set is tactics.
I'll work on it. And here's what I need. You each have your list.
She handed out the handwritten notes. She sat back and watched their expressions. Oblo's brows rose, and he looked up to give her a short nod. Yes, he'd figured it out.
But the Crown gave us permission. Why this?
It was indicated to me that they'd rather we looked like outlaws. I have assurance that it will be cleared up later.
Anything worthwhile?
Yes. And not going with us, though they don't know that. I was given letters patent, empowering us to act as one of His Majesty's fleet in certain matters. To be presented to certain, personages we are unlikely to find where I was told to meet them.
Because...
Petrus gave Sirkin his best civilians are idiots look. Harris glared at him. Sirkin was their weak point, young, inexperienced, and emotionally vulnerable after Amelie's death. She didn't need any more pressure from any of them.
Because either they aren't there, or the captain expects we won't be, or both. And she's not telling us now because we shouldn't know too much.
Those letters are staying behind in what I devoutly hope are secure locations, which I will not divulge even to my crew.
Kevil Starbridge Mahoney owed her favors. He could jolly well put some unopened documents in his own security files for her.
Suppose we actually find out who's putting the pressure on the king and take it off.
Harris was glad Petrus hadn't yet squashed Sirkin's initiative. The girl was young, but she had promise, and her unmilitary background gave her something the others didn't share.
Fine, if we could do it without having the same pressure land on us. But it's like maneuvers. Getting the fire off someone else doesn't make us safe. Our first priority is staying alive, uncaught by the trap we know about and any others.
And Lady Cecilia? I thought maybe we could...
We can't help her. We're the ones anyone would expect to do something, and for that very reason, we can't.
But someone has to!
Sirkin, we have enough to worry about as it is. Keeping the ship free and whole, and ourselves alive in the first place.
Harris signaled the others with her eyes. Time to leave, before Sirkin asked more questions Harris didn't want to answer, especially since she could. They stood, and Sirkin followed, still looking stubborn.
That's all. See you here next week, as usual.
The weekly dinner meeting, which she hoped the Watchers had given up worrying about. Oblo turned off his gadget with a wink.
The courts agreed to hear the case, at least, which I... Well, see you next week if that stinking lawyer doesn't come up with something to drag me downside.
On her way out, she reserved the same room for the same time the following week, as she had from the beginning.